So does anyone know where that sign is, where you can find that sign? Uncertainty ahead. Well, I'm not sure either where it originated from, but I found it in a farm magazine. The last years with all the things that were going on in agriculture and inflation, and that was one of the headings from one of the writers. So, all right, first of all, I am not here to preach to you tonight. I am not a minister, but I'm going to talk about things that are pertinent to our age group. After all, as I look out at all of you, it's definitely a group that has been there, done that. And so there's not a lot of maybe new things, but as different ones of us share, and so it'll be somewhat realistic. What I'm going to talk about tonight might not always sound very positive, but I think it'll get better as the week goes on. And so if you can just think about that as well. There might be times that a person, us here this week, will touch on things that are painful and kind of morbid perhaps, but it is what it is. That's just exactly how we look at this. So are we senior citizen or are we senior saints? There's the psalmist wrote this in Psalm 92, verse 14. He said, "Thou shalt still bring forth fruit in old age. They shall be fat and flourishing." Now, I don't know what David was thinking when he wrote that, but I don't always feel so flourishing and like I'm bringing fruit in old age. However, I do believe that we're not talking about the energy that youth had, but rather not that level, but rather the level of wisdom and freshness that comes with old age. And I find it interesting, I find it very interesting, and I'm going to relate several stories this evening that I enjoy about as much as anything and then draw from those stories. But I find it interesting how a certain amount of younger people appreciate when we have something to say and there's some meat to it. And I like that. I like that. So we're here this week to hear from others, we learn from others, and we be encouraged by others. We're taking time off with our spouse. That's why some of you are here. Maybe just a little weekend vacation. You don't need to be concerned about babysitters, maybe for your grandchildren, but hopefully it was easy enough for you to get away from home. It's amazing how many Bible verses relate to senior citizens. And of course, in all of our stages of life, we look to the scripture for courage and strength and grace to live a victorious Christian life, as it were. Here's a question to ponder. Do we retire or do we repurpose? And those are some of the things we're going to talk about tomorrow evening on the panel discussion. Think about that. Retire or repurpose? In Philippians 3:14, I do not have a PowerPoint. I only am here to point you to the source of power. So Philippians 3:14 says, "I press toward the mark," and then he talks about the high calling, and I'm going to leave that to the ministers to tell you what the high calling and all of that is. But in particular here, when he says, "I press toward the mark," it would be talking about going against the odds, exerting yourself, unceasing force, putting your hand to the plow, we hear that occasionally, and even more beyond that. So how do we press toward the mark in our particular age group? Physically, no, not as much anymore. But spiritually, yes, we press toward the mark. It's a little bit like driving toward a sunset. All right, so you live in this particular valley, and it's the same way in the morning when the sun rises. One time you see the sunset, And the next time you get behind a ridge or something and you don't see the sunset. Then you come up over top again, you say, wow, look at that beautiful sunset. And you're driving west toward the sunset. And then you take another curve on this mountain road. And if you're like me, you get turned around a little bit and you come out like this and you look for the sunset. I'm heading west. You discover you're heading north. The sunset is over here. And so we press toward the mark. We press toward prize of the high calling. And the Bible would refer to it as a race also in Hebrews 12, verse 1 and 2. There's something about this pressing toward the mark that we don't quite know where that sunset is going to be. This ridge, that ridge, or to my left, or did I get turned around? Is it to the right? You know, at home we have calendars and we have pegboards in our kitchens and we have little notes. We jam a note in there and we say, Penn Valley, April, 14th. Pew, there it is. You know where you're going to be April the 14th. But you don't have one that says, I'm out of here, because you don't know when that is. And so we press toward the mark for this sunset time in our lives. Wouldn't that be amazing if you could do that? My dad used to have this little thing I would always kind of enjoy hearing him tell a person. We would hear of a person who died in his sleep, and the man would tell my dad, wow, what a nice way to go. And Dad would look at him and say, well, shall we just bring it to the Lord and put a date to it? No, Jake, no, don't do that. But we don't do that, do we? How would you respond if you would know that you are now on your final descent, as in real close? You know how it is, those airplane rides, and sometimes it's rough up to the very end. How would you respond to your family members, to your friends, if you knew that this is the final descent? The captain said, fasten your seatbelt, put that tray up front, bring your seat up to the full upright. We're going to land soon. So yeah, we don't want this to be a morbid subject, but it is appointed unto man once to die. And I talk with different seniors, and we do think about it more now than I did 10, 20, or 30, 40 years ago. Definitely. That's fine. After all, if we wouldn't think about it and have this hope, where would we be without that? So, we run that ye may obtain. That's in 1 Corinthians 9, 24. And like I said, there's just so many verses that will lend itself to this particular subject or this weekend retreat. 1 Corinthians 9, 24 reads like this. Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize, so run that ye may obtain. I am suggesting here that Paul was saying, it's not that one person wins the race, but you all have a race within yourself. As you press toward the mark, as you notice there is some uncertainty just ahead for all of us, health, a certain amount of us have experienced death, close death in the family and so on. And so we press toward the mark beyond this time of death, as it may be in whatever stage of life. So we approach this stage in life, or how do we keep going without feelings of near panic at times? How about those moments that's when there's seemingly intense moments of anxiety? I suppose we all are made of the same blood enough that there's times you almost feel like you could panic. And I've concluded for the most part, those fears are from Satan. And when are they the worst? Right now? Or will it be a little more so at 5 o'clock in the morning or 4 o'clock? You wake up and you lay there and something happened the other day. Josh, I'm going to need that refilled, I believe. Thank you. So when are these moments the worst in our lives? For me, it's in those morning hours. I'm somewhat rested out, and it's these things come to mind, responsibilities, things in the family, at work, relationships, you name it. Now, let's talk a little bit about some things that you and I might deal with the most intenseness. One is, now this is for seniors, others as well, but especially seniors. One is pride. Sometimes you run across people and there's a sense of pride that seems to come forth. Look what I've done. Oh, when I was your age, you know, this kind of thing. Pride, that's one temptation that seniors may be prone to. They can hardly do it anymore, but they remember. Thanks, Josh. This wasn't that way 30 years ago. It is what it is. By the way, that's why I don't do sales anymore. I used to do auctions, and I don't anymore. My voice does not hold up. All right, another thing that seniors may be prone to deal with, and that is now it's on the flip side of that, and that is feelings of failure. And that's probably me as much as anything. And I know of others that in their last years they say, what have I done for the Lord? And there's times I find myself thinking, what have I done? Not look what I have done, but what have I done? And so there's a temptation that perhaps Satan will throw at you. If it isn't one, it's the other. And then there's a perfectionist, moments of questioning whether God is even pleased with you at all, maybe assurance of salvation issues. And over the years, again, I've visited with people and here at Penn Valley at times, and someone will talk, and I will say, are you a perfectionist? And the answer is yes. How would you know? Because I sense the way you talked and the way you handled yourself. You are somewhat like me. You're a perfectionist, and you can't even attain to your own aspirations. Therefore, Satan will bombard you with those kinds of things. So which is it? Are you a proud person? Do you feel like you're a failure? Or are you a perfectionist and you wonder if God is even pleased with you? And then we have the big one that probably is pertinent to all of us. Worry, fears, concerns grip our hearts. What about sickness? Or will our funds dry up? Health changes can bring on anxiety. I don't know where you fall in any of those categories, but again, it's just things that I've picked up over the years, things that I've experienced, and I would imagine there's others like that in one of those categories. All right, so we need to think more positive, right? Well, Josh is going to really help us with that tomorrow evening and Sunday to be more positive. Now, here's another thing that was interesting, and I think I heard this at a message some time ago. First of all, I would look at 1 Peter 1:13. Let me back up a little bit here. Some studies say we have 40 to 50,000 thoughts barreling through our mind a day. 50,000 thoughts. I can't fathom that. I never had a thing attached to my head to see how many thoughts were twirling around, but it might be a lot. But now listen to this. This is how much you can rely on studies. Another study reported 6,000 thoughts a day. So which is it, Mel? 6 or 50? You don't even know. You hope you have thoughts, right? Sure. Well, the one study suggested that 70 to 80% of our thoughts are negative. And so now the question is, did you include believers in that study? I would venture to say that not 70 or 80% of my thoughts are negative. I don't think so. Daniel, are yours? Are you that negative a person?
I don't think so.
He doesn't think so. I was just wondering if you're even listening to what I'm saying. Elmer, say something. 70, 80%? But 1 Peter 1:13 reads like this. Wherefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and hope to the end for the grace that is to be brought unto you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. So you gird up the loins of your mind, you're sober, and you focus on the Christian's hope, the hope of Christ Jesus. In spite of all these negative thoughts and these issues of feelings of failure, etc., etc. So I'm going to relate a few stories that have, When I was assigned this some time ago, I guess it was over a year ago, immediately I thought of different people that I felt had a positive attitude in life and a positive impact on me even beyond my family. But I will start with my dad. Those of you who knew my dad, he was a gentleman, even though he had some choleric blood in him. But as he grew older, he learned to master that particular temperament. And he was a gentleman. He had a good sense of humor. He wasn't silly, is the way I would describe it. But he had a good sense of humor. For instance, one of them, there was a few of them, in his more senior years, he would forget how old he was. And so he would tell you the year he was born. And now you were on a roll. He was born in 1924. He just passed away 2 years ago. So do the math. And then as the last year or so, people would ask him at times, and he didn't know, but he knew. He told one person, "I don't know how old I am, but at least I feel like I have almost lived one full circle now. It was almost 2024. He had a sense of humor. We had people at church that would like to ask him questions just to see what he would say, because he had a way of making you feel comfortable. He spoke positive things into your life even without saying at times. So my wife and I, this past while, are janitors at our church, and so we go last, right? And we close up. It goes a little while till people leave. During that time, we're also responsible to take my dad home for lunch, Sunday dinner. Now, here's his 95-year-old man. He's standing back there. Everybody else is leaving, and he hasn't left yet because we're the last ones to leave. So someone asked him about, "Jake, what's with this, you know, that you're just lingering around here?" He said, "Well, I don't know, but I did much better in my day. When I had a horse, we were out of here by now, and I didn't have to wait on Omar and Carol." There, I just gave your name away again. My brother told me this the other week. I thought this was kind of neat. I had never heard this one. So my brother Alvin borrowed a pen from my dad and used it a while, and then it was about to pocket it. And my dad looks at him and says, "Well, if you would give me back the pen, then I would have it for you the next time that you need it." So that was a nice way to say, "Give me my pen back, Josh. Come on." My favorite one. Then that's it for my dad, I think. He was at our place for lunch. These are things that maybe we should do more with our children and grandchildren. He was at our place for lunch and wasn't eating much at all. Now remember, this is a 94-year-old man. So I was about to give him more of a dish what we had there because he did not eat much at all. I said, "Dad, you haven't eaten enough to keep a bird alive." He said, "Well, I'm not a bird." He was a very patient man for the most part. He wasn't known to complain. And here's what was really neat. In his last year again, a few of them had a camera in his bedroom because he needed some help evenings and so on. And he was heard to be praying out loud verbally for his family. And that would have included us. That blessed my heart. That he did that not to be heard of men. You know, sometimes I had this thing about us praying to be heard by men. He did not know anyone was listening. And my sister says she heard him, and he went through most of the family by name in his prayers. He was not known to complain, even though he was heard to talk to himself. One time he said he referred to himself as being a lonely old man. So speaking of talking to yourself, excuse me. Speaking of talking to yourself, he would usually tell us, it's all right to talk to yourself, just don't talk back to yourself. So now we're going to look at 1 Peter 5, verse 7. 1 Peter 5, verse 7 says, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. How do you cast your care upon him? Here they are in a bottle, my notes, my thoughts, my morning prayers at 5 o'clock. That's probably when I can do the most. Sometimes I'm simply reminded at that time in the morning, why don't you do what it says in 1 Peter 5, 7? Cast all your cares upon him. And some of them are pretty small, really. They are self-centered at that point for the most part, casting all your care upon him. Now, when you were younger and you were dealing with certain hardships, loss of work, unruly children, or injuries, you name it, whatever it was, you were feeling more in control because you had the energy to bail yourself out. Today, if I mess up, whether it's finances or work, I can hardly make up for lost time. I don't have that energy anymore. So when we were younger, yes, we felt we were more in control. We had this energy. When we were just married, we didn't have teenage responsibilities, grandchildren. We would come up with what we thought was a good plan to fix a certain issue, and then we would act upon it with vigor, sometimes run ahead of God, or worse yet, not even consider him. I did that in my days. There's probably times I did things, and I considered God, but maybe not. I was on a roll. A neighbor man observed me one time. I don't know what I was doing, and he told my dad with a complaining voice, he said, that rip-snorting son of yours, that was me. I don't know what he saw, but today he wouldn't say that. He'd probably say, that lazy bum, he's just sitting around. When he walks awful slow. Now, and then in 1 Peter 5, 8, it says, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. So now the question is, we've known that verse for years, right? A roaring lion. Oh, I have to tell you this while I think about it, because it won't come to me later. Speaking of roaring lion, I was in Haiti one time at a Bible conference, and I had a part there, and our translator was standing right beside me, a tall six-footer. By nature, Haitians hate dogs and lions, and well, I do too, but they're paranoid about those kinds of things. You get the point? You get the setting here? So I'm looking at this verse, and I'm being a little animated, and I'm going, because your adversary as a roaring lion, and he stood here and he goes, whoo! And the Haitians just laughed at him. He goes, oh, excuse me. So now, where was I? Be vigilant Because as a roaring lion, your adversary, the devil. Now, here's a question to think about. So probably when we were youth, we had a certain amount of temptations, all kinds of things in our lives, different trails for different people. And we sensed that Satan was coming at us as a roaring lion. Is that still the way it is today? As a roaring lion? Maybe, maybe not. A little lion? Well, I would submit like this. The areas that you're most vulnerable in is where he's going to attack. So that will be different on a different level than when you were a teenager or 20. But today, that vulnerability may be in how you feel and how you're concerned about your future and your grandchildren. And here he comes and looks over your shoulder in the morning when you get out of bed. Well, you're done. You're a been there, done that man or lady. You're finished. You're toast. And you admitted yesterday, what have I done? Look at that. Boy, he has you now, doesn't he? He would just have you where it hurts. Or whatever your situation might be, where you are most vulnerable, that's where he will attack. And so probably we do well. See, is that said right? We do well. Yeah, I think to realize where we hurt the most or we're most apt to be hurting, and then think about how, or by God's grace, how you can overcome that. In Ecclesiastes 12, there's all kinds of things that the writer said. Maybe I'll just take a little bit of time to look at a few of them. Ecclesiastes 12, remember that chapter? So we have things here that he talks about our members of the body wearing out, and he goes on, and you read through this. And he talks about even one place, where is it? The height and the desire has left you. And so we look at that, and yes, from the age of 60 on, most likely we can begin to relate to a lot of that. Health difficulties can become discouraging. I think he talks about that in verse 8. Now, the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. Kind of a final note there, as it were. I texted a brother some weeks ago who was dealing with a sickness, and a man of strong faith, no doubt about it, a man of strong faith. And he shared with me, he said, I am feeling weak and I'm facing temptations not known previously. And I thought, wow, isn't that amazing? He didn't realize that some of those temptations, he hadn't realized them before, or he hadn't felt them. And he said, now he's feeling it. And so I put him on my prayer list. Do you know how to pray? Well, when my grandfather was a senior person, his last years, he was visiting with my dad one time, and he said, my dad's name is Jake, he said, Jake, I need someone to pray with me and for me that can reach the kingdom. And I'm going, Grandpa, this man was a man of faith. And he started just a lot of things, Christian programs, et cetera, and supported him. But he wanted someone that knew how to connect. And I'm thinking, really? Will I be that way someday? Maybe. You know, when you're really low and sick, there's nothing that feels more comforting, and some of you know this, than a friend comes along and prays for you. You could pray for yourself, but there's something about another person reaching out in your behalf. The psalmist, here's a question. Sometimes people talk about David's writing, the Psalms, and there are a lot of praise and worships and this type of thing in Psalms. And I thought, yeah, there is, but you know, there is a lot of verses are a lot of quotes in Psalms about David crying out and he's lamenting his issue to God. Just an example now. Lord, do not rebuke me in your anger. Have mercy on me, Lord, for I am faint. He admitted his situation. One time he prayed in Psalm 10, why, Lord, do you stand afar off? He was like complaining, I guess. Why are you way over there? Come to me. Don't turn a deaf ear onto me. That's in Psalm 28. Sometimes maybe we're afraid to pray what we think. We might not be respectful enough to God. We want to honor and respect him, but you hear what I'm saying? Oh, I wouldn't dare say that thought because I'm hurting, I'm weak, and I'm struggling with this temptation. I'm an old man, I'm an old lady. Oh, and we don't want to just say everything we think because we might be disrespectful to God. I don't know where to go with that. That would be a subject on prayer. But I think the psalmist gives us reasons to definitely call out to God and share your thoughts. So we feel vulnerable, weaker. We're tired mentally or emotionally. But that does not mean we give up or that God is finished with us. We're going to hear about that Sunday morning. And what a great way that'll be to cap this weekend. But folks, it is what it is. We may as well be realistic about some of these things. And then we can face it head on. Now here's a nice one in Psalm 71. David said, cast me not off in the time of old age, forsake me not when my strength faileth. And I like that prayer. I like that prayer a lot, that we're asking God, please bear with me, even in my old age. It has been said, speaking of golden age, and I didn't make a big study on what golden means. I read different reports and I wasn't satisfied with them. They all varied a little bit. Somebody said golden age is, it's called that because the doctor gets too much of the gold. Another person said it's golden because we have accomplished things and now we can enjoy some of those fruits of our labor, as it were. So that all makes it golden, but it is what it is, isn't it? Whether it's golden or you have another name to ascribe to it. So we might be asking a few questions. This is very basic, but I like to think, the reason I have it up here is that as a senior believer, sometimes we simply need to come back to the basics and remind ourselves where we are in life. There are three things that a believer cannot do without. One of them is what? It's written here. Without me, ye can do nothing. Without the shedding of blood, there is no remission of sin. And without faith, it is impossible to please him. There are three things that a believer cannot do without. Three things for the physical: air, food, and water. And then Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Three more things. I like that three. And there's other threes in the Bible, the Trinity, and there's others as well. But I just came upon this the other week and said, hey, I like that. I want to share that. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Now, just for a bit, imagine our family going on vacation, and we're all packed and ready to go. We go out to the car, the vehicle, and it won't start. And one of the children comes around the side and say, Dad, there's a flat tire. And the vehicle won't start. There's a flat tire. And I finally turn the engine on, and the engine oil light comes on, like I'm low in oil. This is the way we were going to go with this vehicle, right? And I did not have the way done very well. It wasn't going to work. That would mess your whole vacation up because you never get started. The truth, what does the truth represent? Well, so now we have a vehicle that works. It always did work. Now the next thing is we hop in our vehicle from Southern Lancaster County. We're headed for a place up in Potter County. And all that I know, it's north. And I head north. And there's an exit up here, and there's another road here, and it says King of Prussia. And my wife says, King of Prussia? Yeah, we're heading north to Potter County. Well, never make it because I don't have the truth. I don't have the map. You see what I'm saying? I need to have a true way. I need to know the true way to get to Potter County. I need to have a car that works. Now imagine this. The way, the truth, and the life. What does the life represent? Well, imagine now we got into our vehicle. We're headed for Potter County. We get off the main road, and we're on these back country roads, no food or restaurants or anything. And the children begin to complain how they're kind of getting hungry. And I look at my wife. She looks at me. Didn't you put in that big box there sitting right inside the door with all the food? I said, no, I didn't know I was supposed to put that in. We don't have anything to eat in this next 2 or 3 days in Potter County. Life. So Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. He has the right vehicle. He knows which way to go. And there will be sustenance there as we need it. This is a little motto I have close to my desk chair there. And I look at it every day. I almost forget sometimes what it says. But there's times that I will take special interest and notice those words. Believe that God is able, so I pray. I believe that he knows what's best, so I will submit. I believe that God is in control, and so I trust him. And we need this faith and dependence on God probably as much now or more than ever. Because remember, I mentioned how as a young person, you can work, you have energy, and by the grace of God, you work yourself out of an issue, out of a hard case or a situation. But as we become older, we are less able to move ahead and fix things in our lives. A few more examples of people with positive attitudes. And the three that I have here, I think of them different times. And I certainly want to be more like these people. This is only three out of a good bit that I had written down earlier. Willis was an 80-year-old man, and I worked part-time at a fertilizer dealer place. And Willis would come in the spring and make deliveries for us, okay? And he would pull one of these little fertilizer buggies we had. Different times I would get to work when he would be getting there. And he was walking like this. He was ready for a hip and a knee replacement. He was a widower now for about 4 years. And I wanted to encourage him and bless him. He was a fine Christian man. And I would say, good morning, Willis. And he could talk Dutch as well. I'd say, guten tag, Willis. And he would say, good morning, brother. And he just spoke life into everyone around there. He'd come in the office, you know, hunched over, and I'll never forget, I don't think as long as I live, the positive influence he had by the expression on his face as an 80-year-old man, ready for a hip and a knee replacement, and was a widower. Bless his heart. He doesn't drive for us anymore. Now he's 84 or 5, but he works several days a week at a reused place, I think, for Mennonite Central Committee. Brother Ben Lapp, some of you know him, and some of his senior years there at church, he was a great Sunday school teacher, and I don't know if he was diagnosed with, Parkinson's is the shakes, isn't it? Yeah. But he would stand in front of us there, the class, he would want to teach, and his Bible would be shaking, and he would smile, and he'd say, well, this is just the privilege it is I get of being a senior person. And there his Bible was shaking, and we were listening to him talk. Bless his heart. And now one that gets maybe a little humorous here. I worked in a nursing home for several years, my 1W, Most of you know about that. You're my age when the volunteer program, and anyway, I was in Florida at a nursing home. After dinner each day, us orderlies would take our turn, and we would fill the cups with ice water next to the patient's bed. Supposedly, they were taking a nap. We would do it very quietly and carefully. And so I went into Mrs. Cuby's room, and I put that cup there very carefully, very quietly. And she opened her eyes and smiled, and I smiled back. And she said, "Oh, your mother must be proud of you. Such lovely teeth." I was, anyway, maybe at one time. And she just, wow, I was one of the best orderlies around. She just told me that, basically. So I felt good, and I was going to encourage others. About a day or so later, I go down the hallway, and another fella is doing the same thing. And I hear Mrs. Cuby, "Oh, your mother must be proud of you. Such a lovely smile." And I go, "I thought that was me." The point is, she blessed people who served her. Okay? She didn't just pick on me. If you'd have done it, she'd have done the same to you. So those are the kind of things that I think we do well if we can think about that in our senior years like we are in. Was David a bald man? Did he have a head full of hair? Well, Psalm 71:18 reads like this. "Now when I am old and gray-haired, O God, forsake me not." He didn't say bald. That's not the point, though. Here's the point. He didn't say, let me first finish. He said, "O God, forsake me not until I have showed thy strength to this generation and thy power to everyone that is to come." So David, in his senior years, as he was combing his gray hair, the thoughts were not like this now. This is not his thought. "O God, forsake me not until I do more traveling, and until I see my offspring growing up, and until I can take that last trip to, Hawaii Islands would have been a good one for me." Those weren't his prayers. That was not his last wish. His last wish was, or in his latter years, was that he could show God's strength to the next generation and the power to everyone that is to come. So if you feel the winter chills, you concentrate on knowing God better, your attitude will spill over to younger ones and hopefully inspire them in their journey. Strive to maintain a cheerful attitude. I've already shared a few examples here. There are so many ways that we can bless younger children, people in the church, so many ways you can do it. As they go by you, reach out your hand and shake their hand. And one thing I heard and read the other week, I don't know where I read this anymore, but you can be working with a younger person and you might say, "You know what? You're like $1 million to me." And he'll look at you. You say, "I don't have $1 million to give, but you're like that." He just might remember that. He really will. There's a little something I shared last year here, so those of you who had heard it, you either forgot it or you'll hear it again. So I was wanting to be more this kind of person, and I'm sure you do as well. But there's different ways to do it. And so there was a little fella standing or in a foyer with his mother, a fostered adoption week, and maybe he was 2 years old, kind of had a special need. And I went up to him, and his dad and mother were there, and I blessed him. I put my hand on his shoulder, and I blessed him. I don't know what I said, how all that was. The next morning, Carol and I are sitting there in the back, about the fourth row, and this couple comes in front of us, and she's holding him with his head facing us in the back, and he gives me the biggest smile ever. His mother almost had a fit. She said, "He doesn't do that to people." But I submit to you as you bless people, not because of you or me, but something in his spirit said, I love this man. He blessed me. Well, now, obviously, I knew how to do it, right? Sure. So I'm going to put this to use and practice again. So you never know which trail you're going to end up at. So we're walking in the food line, and we're almost at the food, and this fellow behind me is not having a very good day. I thought, I'm going to use my blessing thing on him. And I turn around, I put my hand on his shoulder, and I said, how are we doing, buddy pal? He looked at his mom, said, that man called me a buddy pal. So how does the Bible say you sow the seed and a little bit comes forth and springs and brings forth fruit and the next doesn't? It is possible to be outwardly wasting away and yet inwardly we're renewed day by day. So we continue to grow in grace and we increase in comfort and blessedness.